We have reached the second half of the show here on Darren Donick and Chase. Having a lot of fun. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe, and Elijah Campbell back at the studio running the show. Darren is off today. Should be back tomorrow. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada. We'll get our hockey fix then. Big trade. Jake Allen goes to Montreal. There will be at least one Game 7, a couple of big Game 6s tonight. We'll talk hockey at 1. But as we promised you earlier, Clint Stoerner is going to join us from Sports Radio 610 in Houston, and we're going to talk some Texans. But many of you remember Clint Stoerner, not only his great days in the SEC for Arkansas, but once upon a time, the QB for the Nashville Cats in arena football. Clint, those of us that can go that far back, we always remember that era fondly with the Cats playing in the arena. Before we get started, give us your best. What's the best part of the arena football experience for you, and what's the worst part?
Well, I think the best part is that it was a straight party, right? I mean, with a football game in the middle of it, and that means for the fans and for the players. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed my time in the game and in the city of Nashville. I mean, there's football, you know, cold beer and live country music. I don't know what the hell else a man needs in his life. So at that point in time, it was perfect for me. So there was a lot more good than there was bad. I think probably the negative aspect of it being in Nashville was my history in college football with the fumble versus Tennessee. You know, I caught a lot of flack from Tennessee fans and things of that nature being in Nashville. So that wasn't always the most pleasant experience, but it was fun, man. Look, I thoroughly enjoyed the city. I'm jealous of you guys, man. I love the city, southern sports town with all that good country music, man. I need to visit soon.
Clint, you brought that moment up, and you know, I think all of us that have played, I've had my moments where, you know, I always look back and I wish a play could have gone different. All of that stuff. So, you know, how have you, you know, coped with that? You mentioned it. You came here, and there's all these Tennessee fans that had that fresh in their mind and all of that. How did that affect you? How did you get past that going forward?
Well, luckily I was at a young enough age, and social media wasn't then what it is now. And so you just take it in stride. You know, I think for you and I now and a lot of folks out there listening is, you know, you look at something like that and you sense and you discuss the pressure that players are under. And in reality, you know, the players, whether it's youth or just being in the bubble of being an athlete, I mean, you don't feel that pressure. You deal with what comes your way, good, bad, or indifferent. And that's the way that I viewed it then, you know. So at the moment, it was unfortunate. We had a team that I felt like could have won a national championship that year. And between that play and then not playing well against Mississippi State the next week, we really cost ourselves an opportunity there. And I mean, it's one of those things that in real time, you just deal with it and you move forward. You compartmentalize better than most people do, because that's what college athletes and professional athletes do at an elite level, is compartmentalize. But when you get older and you realize the moment and the opportunity, how unique the opportunity was, how once in a lifetime the opportunity was, it hits home a little bit harder. But man, it was an extreme adverse situation for a 21-year-old kid that was playing ball, and I learned from it, and I'm a better man from it, you know, because of it today. And I don't mind talking about it. Hell, I don't mind talking about it, you know, in a bar at midnight or on the radio at noon. It's all good, man.
Well, excellent stuff. Clint, I got one more fun one on the arena days. Every quarterback in the arena league, because, you know, the game is so quick, you've got to get rid of the ball quick, and there are times you just got to throw it away. And as you mentioned, there's a lot going on at an arena game. You know, you got hot tubs, and you got bands, and you got all cheerleaders, you got everything. What is the craziest story, maybe, of you throwing the ball away? Did you hit? You ever hit anything? You know, anybody ever in the stands make a great catch? Anything crazy ever happen at a game that you played in?
Yeah, I tell you, I got called up in 2010, actually. Golly, that was 10 years ago. But I had not played for 3 years in arena ball, and a buddy of mine was still coaching. Dean Coquinos, who was a coach there with the Nashville Cats,
right,
called me, and he was still coaching. He said, Clint, my quarterback got hurt. He said, I got one game left. Not a big fan of my backup quarterback. You and I didn't end on perfect terms. Why don't you come down here and play a game, and let's have a little fun. I went down there and practiced for a couple of days. Literally, it was the first time I put a helmet on in 3 years. Put a helmet on, practiced, two or three times, and then played in a game. I ended up throwing 7 touchdowns and winning the game in the last minute. And we got the ball back with about 30 seconds left. And a buddy, my mother had come over to the game and with a buddy of mine, and they were sitting about 20 rows up. And I had a chance to throw 2 balls away, and I tried to throw it to mom. I missed by 2 rows on the first throw. And in the second throw, I made a throw of my life and hit my buddy right in the chest. And it was literally, I mean, it was a good 30, 40-yard throw, about 20 rows up in the stands. And so it was just a long shot. And I missed the first time, and Dean said, "Hell, Clint, give it another shot." So I dropped back, and I'll be dang if I didn't drop one in the bucket for old mom. So that was probably the most fun I had in terms of chunking one up in the stand.
And the catch was made clean? You said you put it on the money. Was it a reception?
Oh, it was my buddy, a reception. Yeah, it was a catch by my buddy that was about 45 years old.
Okay.
And he quickly lateraled it to my mother.
All right, so a hook and ladder. That's pretty good. Not bad at all.
Yeah,
good story.
And she walked around the post-game party, latched onto that ball like Bo Jackson, man. She had it, the breadbasket, 2 arms on it. So, yeah, it was a good time, man. Love the arena years, no doubt.
That is good stuff. So, Clint, let's fast forward to present day. We've just been, checking out the Titans every day. They just made a kicker switch. We're all wondering what's going to happen with Jadeveon Clowney. Would they make a move there? What's the biggest thing going right now? What's the biggest question mark for the Texans at this point?
Wow, there's question marks all over the place. I mean, you would think it wasn't an 11-win team, right? I mean, it's Anthony Weaver, new defensive coordinator, calling the shots for the first time. Tim Kelly, new offensive coordinator. I know he was the offensive coordinator. He had that title last year, but this is the first year that Bill O'Brien's allowing him to call plays. So I don't know that there's anything. If you really start breaking down the question marks, the unknowns about this team, in 2020 versus 2019, I don't know that you need to go too far beyond the 2 play callers. I think there's your biggest impact, your biggest opportunity for improvement from 2019 to 2020. But offensively, I think the fan-friendly question answer to your question would be life without DeAndre Hopkins. Bill O'Brien trades DeAndre Hopkins to the Arizona Cardinals, and in comes David Johnson. Can David Johnson stay healthy? With that second-round pick, they ended up maneuvering around and acquiring Brandon Cooks from the Los Angeles Rams. And so how does he fit in at the receiver position? Randall Cobb, they signed in the offseason as well, gave him a $9 million a year deal after 1 year in Dallas. And so there was a lot of change, on the offensive side of the football from a personnel standpoint. And how in the heck Deshaun Watson goes from highlight reel generator feeding the ball to one of the best, if not the best receiver in the league in DeAndre Hopkins, to all of a sudden this year, he's got to be a distributor. He's got to be a guy that processes at a higher level and gets the ball to the open guy, gets through progression. So, man, I wish there was a simpler answer to your question, but when you talk about, differences between 19 and 20 seasons, there's just a ton of them here in Houston.
Clint Sterner is with us talking Houston Texans, and another guy that gets mentioned of, well, if he can just stay healthy, he can be a big weapon for the Texans, is Will Fuller. And, we've seen him here a few times, but it feels like, Clint, that there's always that question mark of, is he going to be good to go? What is the health situation with Will Fuller, and how effective do you think he can be?
Well, we all know how effective he can be, right? I mean, we all know that the offense takes a huge turn in terms of being explosive when Will Fuller's on the field, and so we all know what he can be. I mean, he's done some work on some posture work this off season, and with some doctors outside of Houston, I believe, and some trainers outside of Houston that he thinks is going to help him. I don't know if the posture was the way he walks or the way he sits or just the arch in his back. I don't know how all that impacts hamstrings and groins and lower body muscle tears, muscle pulls. But we all know that if he can stay healthy, that he can be one of the most explosive receivers in the league. I think he is a legitimate number one receiver in this league. You see a lot of guys that play opposite DeAndre Hopkins. I always look back to the Cowboys right after I left Dallas with Terrell Owens and Miles Austin were together, and Miles Austin was a great number two, and then he couldn't just figure out how to be a number one. once Terrell Owens left. You know, there's a lot of guys like that in this league. I don't think Will Fuller's one of them. I think he's a complete receiver, and this is a contract year for him to stay healthy and be able to do it. Guys, I mean, it's an interesting year for him. There's a lot of pressure without the attention that Hopkins was receiving. You know, you got to believe he's going to see some different looks. So staying healthy is one thing, but even if he does, this season is going to be totally different for him, man. So, you know, I can't wait to see what Deshaun Watson can do with a guy like Will Fuller staying healthy for 16, 17, 18 weeks. That's the key. Is Fuller's great, and when he's on the field, it's great, and we all know what he can do. But if he can stay on the field, it's about where does Deshaun Watson take his game? What can Brandon Cooks do? How can he contribute if Will Fuller's a true impact for 16 games? How can David Johnson earn $10 million a year if Will Fuller's consistently taking the top off of defenses? He's just a game changer for everybody around him.
We know that Deshaun Watson has the ability to move around when he needs to, but you also want to keep him upright, keep him healthy. The move was made for Laremy Tunsil last year for that offensive line to try and make them better. Just how big of an impact has he made so far with that O-line?
Oh, Laremy, I mean, that's huge. I mean, everybody in the country that talks NFL football was just banging Bill O'Brien about giving up two first-round picks and, you know, for that trade, not having a contract worked out with Laremy Tunsil before he got here. You know, that was the talk. And if you really look at it, that offensive line in 2018, it was damn near criminal to ask Deshaun Watson to go out there and play an NFL season behind that offensive line. So whether you look at the simple fact that the offensive line had to improve drastically, and one way to immediately do that is to bring in Laremy Tunsil. You, at that point, you slide your first-round draft pick, Titus Howard, to right tackle. So not only can he is he better suited for that being a rookie, you the trickle-down effect is big time. Tunsil plugs in at left tackle. Titus Howard plugs in at right tackle. So you really solve two problems with that sign. And then you got a guy like Laremy Tunsil, who, by the way, I don't know how well you guys know him, but he is much more of a leader. There's much more of an authority figure than I thought, you know, Laremy Tunsil would bring, or really much more than what most offensive linemen bring to the table. He is a legit leader on this football team, not just in the offensive line room. And so you talk about him helping Max Sharping, who's also a rookie last year that's playing right next between him and Nick Martin. The Laremy Tunsil move was just huge, not just for the left tackle position, but literally all the way across the board to help rebuild that offensive line that so desperately needed to be rebuilt.
It's hard to believe that J.J. Watt has been in this league for 10 years now, but he has, and we've seen him battle through some injuries in the last few years. We know what he was. We know what he can be. But what is truly expected of him now that he is further along in his career at 31 years old?
Well, I think it's the expectations here in Houston are probably a little bit higher than the ones nationally, because everybody talks about him getting old and you know, the injuries and everything of that nature. We all understand the injury issues with Fuller or Watt, or doesn't matter what team you're covering. There's guys on the team that have had too many injuries over the last 3 or 4 years or throughout their career. So if we get beyond that, there's no doubt about it, man. There is zero doubt about it that J.J. Watt is behind Aaron Donald. He is the most disruptive defensive lineman in the game still to this day. And if he can stay healthy, that's what you have to expect from him. The scary thing in Houston, guys, is very simple on the defensive side of the football. The pass rush at this point in time, without them acquiring anybody in the offseason that's a difference maker in the pass rush, is that pass rush, which I think the success of the defense, it hinges on J.J. Watt. And J.J. Watt has not played beyond 8 games in a season three of the last 4 seasons. And so the defense's ability to produce hinges on number 99 and hinges on J.J. Watt, and J.J. Watt hasn't stayed healthy. That's still the case in 2020. This thing hinges on J.J. Watt, barring some rookie, Ross Blacklock stepping up big time, Charles Omenihu maybe playing out of, you know, just lights out in year two. But right now, man, this whole thing is hinging on J.J. Watt, and that's a scary thing to think of considering.
Clint, before we let you go, everybody's got their opinion on Clowney around here, for sure. Should they do it? Should they not do it? We're kind of all over the map. And, of course, the price is probably everything. What price would you be willing to commit to bring Jadeveon Clowney into the mix, especially for a team like the Titans that has a need there?
Well, I think, you know, the price, guys, in today's game, I mean, what's the difference between $15 million and $18 million? I know the answer is three, but really, in the NFL today, for Clowney-caliber player, who gives a rip, right? I think that the important thing here is it a one-year deal? I would be very hesitant to commit beyond 1 year for Jadeveon Clowney. He's in a position now in his career where, man, it's a every snap moving forward this season, if he does get with a team, it's a contract snap, man. It's a contract year. He's playing a stat-driven position that you're not going to get paid unless you have sacks, unless you have tackles for loss. And so he's got to be motivated at this point in time. I would be more interested in making sure it was a one-year deal, and I would rather have Clowney for 1 year, $19 million, than 3 years at the $15 million number at this point in time. Give me 1 year. It's a contract year. He's got to play lights out. If he doesn't, you cut bait. If he does, then you go back to the drawing table. I don't know. If I had to throw a number at you, I'd be comfortable with $16 or $17 million. He's as disruptive as you want a guy to be. There's zero doubt about that. There's no debate, guys. If he's healthy and he's on the field, I don't care what the stat number is. He's disruptive, and you can build around him. When it's all said and done, in order for him to get paid long-term money, he's got to put up the numbers. But if I'm a defensive coordinator, I like that guy in my huddle.
Clint, great insight. Thank you very much for joining us. Good luck to you, and we'll talk to you down the road.
You got it. Y'all have a good one, man.
All right. Clint Stoerner from 610 Sports Radio down in Houston, now a sports talk show host. Great, great stuff. Clint Stoerner has been a lot of different places, knows football. That was good. Let's regroup. When we come back, we're going to ask to get some feedback from all of you, the listeners, on the state of the Titans here. We're going to take some calls and some texts, some Titans questions, your level of confidence, your optimism. Maybe you got an opinion on Clowney you want to kick around. Maybe you got an opinion on the kicker situation. Anything that's on your mind via Titans, we want you to either call, go old school, 615-737-1025, or text on the text line. We got this going for you. Just fire off a text, and we'll comment on it. It's brought to you by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We want to get some Titans talk going during this hour. 737-1025, call or text. Stay tuned. We return in just a moment. Okay, it's time to get back at it here.
Now, this is cutting edge.
Yes, the B-52s.
Yes.
I will say this. You'll never hear the B-52s the same again when you realize the male singer and this sounds like John Mulaney.
You're right. He kind of does.
Okay.
I've never heard it the same since.
I gotcha. All right. You heard Clint Stoerner talking about Jadeveon Clowney. We've been talking a lot of Titans today, and now we're just a little bit over a week away. You got a lot of people weighing in on their final 53-man roster. So here is the question. I'm going to put it in these terms, and we want to hear from you. 615-737-1025 via phone or via text. And, of course, our text line brought to you by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We want you to weigh in. We want opinions. We want questions. Here is our question to you. Can this Titans team, as it is right now, win the Super Bowl? Now, remember, they're in a window to win. They've been building for years to get to the point where they're a contender. They want to be a contender. Last year, it was good to great. Last year, they were on the verge of greatness by the end of the year, a half away from maybe the Super Bowl. You know, running the gauntlet of winning in some of the toughest places. It's hard to get back there. I'm not saying you call in and you say they're going to win the Super Bowl. That's pretty bold. But do they have what it takes? Do they have enough to where you can honestly say they are a contender right now? 737-1025. Want to hear from you. I was very compelled, Chase, on Clint Sterner's answer on Clowney. And it fell into line with what I think we spelled out with Floyd Reese. Floyd has raised all of the key issues as to why he would be very wary of investing anything. I think anybody would take him if all you had to do was sign him to the league minimum, right? Which is what Floyd says that he'd be willing to do, unless Mike Vrabel came in, who has played with Javon Clowney, Jadeveon Clowney. He's coached him. He said if he came in and made a strong case and said, Floyd, I need to get this guy, then he would be swayed. Until then, it's veteran minimum with a bunch of incentives. You heard Clint Sterner say, I'd be willing to go with an investment as long as it's a one-year investment. That's kind of closer to what I'm thinking in this situation to where the Titans are, because I think they need that disruptive player. The word is disruptive.
Yep.
And even if he's not there for 16 games, if he gives me what he can and every time he's in there and on the field he's disruptive, then I like what I can get out of that, because I've got the role players. I've got the chemistry. I think I've got the offense that can score me a lot of points. I feel good about that. There's any number of things that can derail any good team season, as history has shown, especially with the Titans. You know, 2001 was not a good year for the Titans. Not because they didn't have the talent to win at all, but everybody got hurt. Everything went wrong.
Yeah.
They bounced back the next couple of years, and they were contenders again. But I think this roster is ready and poised to win, but they need that icing on the cake. They've got the money set aside. I think they could do it. I'm willing to go a little further than Floyd is to go for Clowney, but because I still think I'm a little short when I'm thinking, can this team beat the Chiefs? Can this team beat the Ravens? Can this team beat whoever is in front of them to get to the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
I think they can, but I'd really like my chances a little better if they had that one more weapon. So that's how I stand. I want to hear what some people have to say. 737-1025 is the call or the text. So, Chase, give me your take.
Yeah, and we'll read some text in just a second. You bring up beating the Ravens or the Chiefs. Well, they beat the Ravens last year, but how did they do that? Two big pieces of that were Jarrell Casey and Logan Ryan, no longer here. Jarrell Casey, they'll see week one. The Clowney situation.
And they did beat the Chiefs, for the record. We know
they
that,
did,
right?
Yeah, they did. They did beat the Chiefs in the regular season. But my thing with Clowney is I listened to Floyd and then I heard Clint Sterner, and it goes with the theme of, all right, you'll hear one side of it and then you'll hear the other side. And so far there just hasn't been movement. Now I do wonder, and who knows if Clowney would do this, but you know, he's running out of time to get what he wants, because after week one, they don't have to guarantee the contract. So, I mean, it changes. The whole equation changes after the first week. So I wonder what that, you know, what that does, if that expedites things with him, if you now have teams that are going, well, if he wants to play, we're just going to wait. We'll wait a week and then bring
him in. There's no question that the equation changes at that time. You might have some teams that haven't been in the ball game at all.
Yeah.
That all of a sudden jump into the ball game if it gets to that point.
Because it completely changes. For this roster right now, I like the roster. There's talent. But I can't definitively, in my opinion, say that this roster is currently constructed is better than last year's. It's got potential to be, but it's so tough to replace what Logan Ryan brought from being in that defense. And yes, Dean Pease is another part of this, of being gone. But Logan Ryan, what he was able to do in the secondary from a blitzing standpoint, I mean, the guy was top of the team in sacks, was one of the go-to guys from that category because of his blitzing abilities. You're going to have to try and replace that and have that element. And then Jarrell Casey and how disruptive he can be. We think that they have the pieces that they can replace that you're going to have Malcolm Butler, who's healthy, that Adoree Jackson's going to continue to take steps. Christian Fulton, who hasn't been able to practice, you know, they like him. Jeffrey Simmons is going to be that disruptor. But the key phrase is, we think. We don't know. And that's what gives me a little bit of concern when it comes to this roster and my confidence in it. I like the players, but can they put it all together? And there's really only one way we're going to be able to find out. So that's kind of how I feel about it. And I know some of you want to weigh in via the text line.
All right, jump in. 615-737-1025. Call or text. Can this roster win a championship? That is the question. And if you have concerns, share them. Ask a question back to us. We would love participation. Jump on in. Let's get a little Titans discussion. Chase, get it started. What do we got on the text line?
So Ron texts in with a couple of texts. Good afternoon, guys. So what's more important to Clowney now? I know he doesn't want to do training camp. Is it the money or a team that could have a chance to try and get to a Super Bowl? Money sounds more important to him at this point. He also says, to be honest, my answer to your question is no. I just feel like most people that we took a step backwards with our defense and a step forward with our offense, we can make the playoffs, but it's like 9-7 or at 10-6.
In terms of the money, he is at a point in time where his earning potential going forward, you try to put yourself in any player's shoes and say, this is his one shot. Money's got to mean something. But it also said something. If it's true, the reports that he's turned down pretty good money, really good money from the Browns, that where he goes has got to be important to him, right?
Sure.
At least to that extent. You've heard two different things. He's not budging. I think Peter King even has been on the record as saying, if he doesn't get $15 million, he's not going to play, which is really good fodder. It gets people's attention. But what's more, $12 million or zero? You know, the Le'Veon Bell dilemma that we talked about ad nauseum a couple years ago, his decision to sit out rather than take what was out there. So money means something to him, but I think there's part of him that's saying, I want to go where there's a fit. I really believe that he sees a fit with the Titans. He just wants to get his asking price, but every passing day that goes by, that asking price has not been offered by this team. That's pretty clear, right? I think John Robinson has his level set that he wants to go to. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's been out there for weeks, even months, and he hasn't budged off of it. And as you said, Chase, it's an important thing. Is it what? After week one, the landscape changes.
Yeah, the contract
guarantee. Right. Not guaranteed. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that could certainly change things. Let's go to another one. Make sure you identify yourself, 615.
Yeah, give us your name. Throw your name on there when you text in.
615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I think this year all depends on the offense. We know the defense will be somewhat worse, but I think if the offense can score 21 to 30 points a game, then they will end up winning more and not needing the defense to hold teams down so low to even have a chance. The run game can chew the clock and wear teams down, especially if they can get ahead quickly. And you brought up the offense, how you feel about them, that you're confident in the offense. I agree, and I know we're still going to ask the question of, okay, can Tannehill repeat what he did? Can Derrick Henry not necessarily repeat his you know, being the leading rusher in the league, but be along those lines and be that same level? Can A.J. Brown, you know, improve upon his rookie year, and can Corey Davis be a factor? So there are questions, but maybe they're not as tough of questions.
They're different questions.
You know, they're certainly different than the defense.
Think about the questions compared to last year's questions or the year before's questions about the offense. Can they repeat? Which really, if you decode that, means can they repeat as one of the most electrifying offenses in the game? And that's saying something when you're putting it in comparison to the Chiefs and some and the Ravens. If you look at the numbers when Tannehill took over, especially as you progressed up the season, that offense was up there with the elite offenses in the game. So we're talking about repeating an elite-level offense. When's the last time you could really say that going into the season with the Titans?
Yeah.
Could they have an average offense? You know, this is an above-average offense on paper, even if they don't hit what they hit last year, right? And that's yeah. way ahead of where they've been. And I think, you know, when I think of Derrick Henry, I look at what he did last year with the fact that he was running on a bad hamstring, putting together huge numbers, and also didn't even play in one of the games.
Right.
Right? What could he do if he didn't have that?
Yeah, I mean, who knows what it would have looked
like. He's a dominant player.
But if, you know, let's say they did play him against the Saints, knowing that he had been fighting through the hamstring, he could have been, I mean, what would that have done for the playoffs? I mean,
it was the right move. I'm just pointing out that all of the numbers he put up, that was with a hamstring injury and missing a game.
Sure. Sure. And I mean, he had.
The first part of the year, you know, he didn't have half of an offensive line to right. work with. And, you know, he was a little bit of a slow starter because of it.
He had just over 1,500 yards last year in 15 games. If he gets to 12 or 1,300 this year, I think people are happy about that. Now, we did have one question on the text line as my cat tries to help me here. What are your thoughts on the backup running back with Evans missing practice? Mike Vrabel did say earlier today that he hoped that Evans would be participating in practice. I think that is a very good question, though. I mean, they brought in, you know, Jeremy McNichols, who had been in camp. They're trying to find an answer at the backup running back position because Evans has been hurt. They don't need Evans to be the offense, but they need him to contribute, and they need to be able to rely on somebody. If Derrick Henry has to come out of the game, they want to add more to the passing game in the backfield. And so I do think it's a concern. It's a good question. If Evans is good to go the next few days, then you'll see what he's got for the Monday night game against the Broncos here in a week or so. But I think that's going to be something that you definitely have to pay attention to.
737-1025. We want you to weigh in, call or text. Can this Titans team win a championship with the current roster? And if not, what are your concerns? There is another option at running back. Dalen Dawkins, right? I think he could fit into the equation a little bit. If, let's just say, your Evans is not ready to contribute at the start of the season, which I think is possible. I think it's a lot to ask that he could really, other than maybe a special package, a play here and there, I don't know if he's ready for regular rotation yet. Dawkins has been sitting there with the team for a while. He's had some impressive preseason games.
They cut him, though. He's not on the roster
right
now.
You don't think they'll bring him back, though?
Potentially. I mean,
like,
they...
Is he... I look at what he's done. Like, I know, you know, there's a huge pool of players that are on practice squads, they're off practice squads, they get cut, they latch on with somebody else, they bounce around. He's in that pool. So is McNichols, right?
Yeah.
So if maybe McNichols is, in their mind, a better option than Dawkins. They've both been around.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's an injury one's dealing with. I don't know. But a guy like that, is that a guy that could all, you know, if, let's say, Henry plays a little bit bigger role. He's more of a three-down guy. Maybe he catches a little bit more, which they've talked about some. And maybe it's this other guy that could fill the gap for a while, whether it's McNichols, Dawkins, or other.
And I think you're forgetting somebody, too. I mean, even though he's listed as a fullback, Kari Blasingame can run the ball. You know, Kari Blasingame
yes.
is somebody that, and we've seen him catch the ball. I mean, we know what he did at Vanderbilt.
And I agree. I put him in a little bit of a different category.
Certainly.
I don't see him as a tailback.
Right. It certainly is. But I believe that he's somebody and we saw once they got him last year and brought him in, it's like, oh, okay, he made a difference. And so he's somebody that they can use. But running backs on the roster besides Henry and Evans, they have Marcus Marshall, who was out of James Madison. They have McNichols and then Sunaris Perry, a 6-year veteran from Louisville. Those are the backs they have in camp right now. They have to answer that question. And I know most people have them carrying, you know, besides they'll carry Blasingame, but Henry and Evans, and that's it. I just, especially in a COVID type year, I wonder, and Teron and I were talking about this. He did not have Jeremy McNichols on his 53-man roster, but he did tell me that he would certainly consider that move, based on, you know, some of the things we're talking about. If there's questions with Evans and the health and also the COVID stuff. But that
does somebody emerge from that group that fits into the category of Michael Pruitt or
yeah,
Anthony
I think that's
Fertz
what they're hoping for.
Yeah, well, everybody's hoping for those guys, but the Titans seem to have a keen eye for that. And that can sway them in how they go about putting the roster together, right? Because right now they have to be thinking that.
Here's
Evans,
an interesting
Evans
text
isn't though. Ready. Who is the other guy? Who is the next guy in the mix that gives me an option at running back?
Maybe he's not on the roster. This is an interesting text from Andrew. Because we talked about this earlier. Who did Tampa Bay just sign? Leonard Fournette.
Right.
They're not going to have room for everybody.
Yeah.
Andrew says, well, Sean McCoy will end up getting cut in Tampa Bay. I think they should take a look and pick him up.
Okay. Not a bad idea.
I don't know if I hate that idea.
For no money?
I mean, for no money. And I think that that's...
After week one,
yeah. That's one of those after week one... Week one deal, and Tyler says the same thing regarding the backup running back. Keep an eye on LeSean McCoy now that Fournette is in Tampa. It wouldn't surprise me if he came in at vet minimum if he got cut as the third down back. So Shady McCoy is certainly an interesting thought after week one if that ends up happening. Because, yeah, I mean that was the first thought I had, even though I've seen like he hasn't missed a day of practice. He's been working hard. You know, he obviously wants to stay in the league. He's not ready to call it a career yet. That certainly could be one. But you also have to just factor in that there are going to be cuts across the league. And while it's different that you don't have preseason tape to look at, there could be some running backs out there that the Titans identify as, okay, that guy's a fit.
True.
Let's bring him in and see what we got and maybe have that be the third guy.
All right, when we come back, we'll have another round of calls and texts, 615-737-1025. The question to you, we want your response. Can this roster win a championship in its current form for the Titans? Tell us why. Tell us your big concerns. What do you think? When we come back, one more segment of this. At 1 o'clock, Elliot Friedman comes on to talk NHL at top-level sports talk with Elliot Friedman when we're talking hockey. Coming up at once. Stay tuned. Another round of Titans questions from you next. Of the noon hour, we're talking Titans. We want to hear from you. Fire off a text. Give us a call. 737-1025. Our text line presented by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Can this Titans roster win a championship? Yes or no? What's your biggest concern? 737-1025. Chase, what do we got?
All right, let's see. Let's go to Jeff in Bellevue on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. With questions about the secondary pass rush will be essential to the defense this year. Do we think Vic Beasley is a big enough upgrade to make the difference with the rush? Jeff, I have no idea because he's not on the field. And that's,
well, we think that he might be doing stuff today.
That's the hope, but I mean, you can hear Vrabel doesn't like to show a lot anyway. He knows the questions he's got to get asked in a press conference. He doesn't like to answer them, but you can tell the frustration that anytime pass rush specifically comes up, whether it's, you know, Clowney being brought up or Vic Beasley or what have you, that he knows that that's a big issue with his team right now. And so I can tell that there's frustration with him. But, you know, Vic Beasley, it was one of those, he was brought in for on a one-year deal, I think $9 million. You know what he's done? I mean, he's had a really good season in 2016 with the Atlanta Falcons. But there's also been, you know, talk about him of, all right, he's lazy at times. He falls off. He doesn't give it 100%, and they're going to try and get that out of him with a change of scenery, but he hasn't been on the field. So, you know, it took him forever to show up to camp, and, I mean, it has not been a good start of the relationship between Beasley and the Titans. And so, right now, I'd say no.
I say no also. I'm very worried that they don't have enough, especially when you throw on top of it that Roberson, there could be a pretty significant issue there. And that's another guy that was giving you some secondary stuff, right? And you've mentioned several times, Jace, Logan Ryan's ability to blitz. And I think they'll come up with their ways, their creative ways to get pressure on the quarterback by bringing extra people. But there really is no substitute for just the straight-up guys that can get to the quarterback on their own, or at least draw double teams that open it up for another guy. So you don't have to bring five or six to get to the quarterback and put yourself in a tough position. It's simple math, right? There's a lot of different schemes. There's great ways to draw it up. But the bottom line is you got to have people who can beat people one-on-one.
Well,
I don't think they have enough.
Yeah, and it's always going to stick in my mind. And granted, I understand that Patrick Mahomes is a different breed from anybody else. But sitting there in Kansas City next to Floyd, watching Harold Landry do his best to get to Patrick Mahomes, and it's like he'd almost get there and get barely a finger on him, and then Mahomes would get away. And just seeing how gassed Harold Landry was at the end of that game from trying to get to the quarterback. I mean, that's your best pass rusher.
Be handled if he is your main guy and he's the main focus of your pass blocking. You can handle Harold Landry. He's
sure,
a good player.
But
he's
you
good.
Still want more of that.
Like you need somebody to balance and give Harold Landry better matchups on the other side. If you do, then I think his production will go way up.
Yeah, I continue to use the comparison of, and I know a different type of defense. Jeff Fisher ran the 4-3. This is more of a hybrid. But Albert Haynesworth, Kyle Vandenbosch. The reason that the catalyst in all that was Albert Haynesworth. That Albert Haynesworth was so dangerous that teams would double team him all the time, which opened up the door for Vandenbosch. But it made them both so effective. You gotta find some sort of combination like that. And I don't know if they've been able to. If they're going to be able to do that, whether it's Beasley or they bring in Clowney or what have you, it's just obviously going to be a lot.
Floyd, if you look back through the years, there were a series of defensive linemen that Floyd Reese would let go to free agency because he understood that the guy that was creating the disruption was Javon Kearse. Kenny Holmes was a first-round draft pick that they let walk who was getting double-digit sacks, but it was because he was getting great matchups on the other side. There was a few other guys that fit that category too. Good defensive linemen that had production, but they weren't the difference makers. That's what I think the defensive line needs, one more difference maker. Harold Landry, I would put in the category of very good, but not the, at least to this point in his career, not the difference maker that that opens things up for everybody else. I still think they lack one guy there. I wish there were a lot of options out there, but there's only one option.
Yeah, and
right?
I mean,
there's only really one option that's out there sitting there looking for a job.
Everson Griffin was out there. Dallas signed him. So,
and is he really that guy anyway? I don't know.
I mean,
maybe he helps. I don't know.
He helps, but he's not what you hope Clowney can be. Now, we've gotten a lot of questions about the defense and the pass rush. That seems to be what most of you are concerned about. A couple of questions about the secondary, and while I understand that, I think Fulton's going to be okay. I believe Malcolm Butler coming off the injury and being healthy, he's going to be solid. He's going to be good. Yes, you're going to miss Logan Ryan, but I like the addition of Jonathan Joseph. The more I talk about it, after interviewing him a couple of weeks ago, the more people I talk to, the more I like that addition. And Adoree Jackson, if he can replicate what he did after his injury, he had to deal with that even before it. But he had a huge game against Baltimore. I think he took steps in the right direction. He needs to do it again this year. I think the secondary is going to be okay. But Ron brings this up. I do have a few worries. One, do we keep two quarterbacks or three quarterbacks? That's a question we've asked. Two, I worry about the backup center position, which is just as important as the quarterback when it comes to calling out block assignments. And then he brings up three, the pass rush, which he's weighed in on, sorry to say, but no Super Bowl chance in our current position. The offensive line, we feel better about across the board from the starters, but the depth. You know, yeah. Who replaces Dennis Kelly from the depth?
That's where
is that Isaiah Wilson? Is it Quisenberry? But the backup center question is one you don't really think about, but it is important.
Quisenberry, I keep wanting to call him Quisenberry because I grew up in the 80s, as we've covered earlier in the show with the Go-Go's talk. But can he play center? Because you were saying that he might be the lead candidate to be the Dennis Kelly, the guy who can move in. I don't know that Dennis Kelly ever played center. But.
No, and center is such a tough position to really evaluate. Right now, on the roster, the centers that they have outside of Ben Jones, Aaron Brewer, who's a rookie out of Texas State, undrafted guy, and Daniel Monier, who is a three-year guy from Colorado. So those are your backup centers. As for guys that can slide into that position, I'm not sure. But it is certainly they've had those guys that it's just kind of been a revolving door because Ben Jones has been so solid for you. But you know, we saw last year Ben Jones play a little bit of guard. When he came out, you know, they slid guys around. So I do wonder what that looks like Ben Jones is getting up there.
All right, we got a break and get to Elliot Friedman. That's coming up. Thanks to all of you that participated in our conversation. We're going to do more of this as we move forward. We switch gears. We talk to the best when it comes to hockey talk. Elliot Friedman, there's at least one game seven. Could there be more? Two more games tonight with teams trying to get to a game seven. Stay tuned. We talk hockey next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.